Welcome to NorAm Assets, Your Money, with Danny Stewart.
You never know how far the stock is going to go down.
And Tim Razor.
Danny knows I'm a geek for all of this stuff.
If you're seeking the best stock knowledge this side of Wall Street, you've come to the right place.
I'm sorry, did I steal your stuff?
No, you didn't steal any thunder. Who's handling this segment?
For the next hour, Danny and Tim will be talking investing.
Investing is 90% psychological, and I love that.
Trades.
The market will usually overshoot to the downside and to the upside.
And dumpster fires.
When do you say my principal loss isn't worth the dividends I'm getting?
And now, here's your hosts, Danny and Tim.
There is zero, zero, zero originality right now in a lot of spaces, a lot of facets that affect our lives. But before I get into that, Danny, you used to have an OtterBox on your iPhone.
I did.
Right. Listen, stock nerds, market lovers, I'll tell you something before we get into the show here and then we introduce the show and do everything properly. OtterBox has fantastic customer service. So true story, drop my phone. I drop a lot of things as I'm not a very good multitasker as I get older. And my plastic cracked on the fascia of the OtterBox. Mm-hmm. So I call OtterBox and without any equivocation, nothing, without any issues, OtterBox goes, okay, yeah, let's send you a new one. They didn't ask for a receipt. They didn't ask for any kind of proof of purchase. They say, hey, did you register your product? That is one, fantastic service. And two, it's now how I'm going to get every phone case in the future. I'm just going to call them and tell them my old one broke. I'm kidding. I'm not going to do that. But listen.
You know, that's why they make different. Every time the new phone comes out, they make slightly different size. So you can't just do that.
No, I wouldn't do that. But listen, fellow OtterBoxers, I know there's a legion of you out there that listen to this show. If your case is not performing the way you expected it to, call OtterBox. They are based in Colorado and have the best customer service. I like to call that out when I actually have a very good experience with customer service.
All right.
Okay, so that's how I started off the show, Stock Nerds and Market Lovers. It's Danny Stewart, Don Vandenborde. I'm back. I'm going to do the show for a little while with you, Daniel.
All right. Timmy boy is back.
So we'll do.
So how's little Remy?
He's doing really well. He's doing fantastic. He's growing. So a little underweight yet, but he's growing. So he grew, I think, half an inch, quarter of an inch since the last time we spoke.
That's quite a bit.
I was going to say it is quite a bit, actually. So what I want to talk about. There's such a lack of creativity in the retail space right now where I don't want to beat up all the, JCPenney's hit an all-time low on Friday. Well, that's not even funny.
Well, I'm sorry.
No, I know. I know you're not. Danny is not laughing. Let me just.
You look at a chart, it's been
right
foretelling for a long time, but they miss big.
Right, but let me clear up what Danny was not laughing at. There have been so many jobs lost in the retail space.
Oh, yeah.
And Danny is not at all laughing at that. It's just retail's been such a dumpster fire of an area, and it's real easy to beat it up, and that's not what I want to do. Mm-hmm. I want to talk about the lack of creativity that surrounds the space, and where I'm gonna preface it by telling you Nike and Under Armour will be the worst investments you'll make. So just keep that in the back of your mind.
Bold statement.
Well, it's what I genuinely think here, and so
like True Grit, that's a bold statement for a one-eyed fat man.
I've got two eyes, but I am a fat man. So. God, I need to do something about it.
You know who said the actor that said that to him across the pasture?
No.
Robert Duvall. Go ahead. I'm sorry.
Really?
Yeah.
Robert Duvall. Is that the same Robert Duvall that was in
There's only one and only Robert
Duvall. Hold
on. Duvall.
He was in the mafioso movies that I really enjoy.
The Godfather.
Yes. Yeah.
That little well, he was mini series in the 70s.
Oh my God, The Godfather is so great.
Yeah. I watched it just the other night.
He was a consigliere, right?
He was the adopted son of the family, and he went to law school.
He's
so
a consigliere. Yeah, that's what I thought. De Niro was in, they just had a reunion recently. The Godfather.
I mean, it's like 40 years, 50 yeah. years, 40, something like 40 that.
40 years. So, okay, so a lack of creativity in the retail space, and then I'm going to tell you why it's going to affect our...
Was that you, Don?
The one, seriously. I think Don just walked in. Don just walked in. He's got a Don has a chime on his door, as, like stores of old. Oh, we have a customer. Oh, it's just me again.
Yeah, they hear that like three times a day at JCPenney.
There you go.
Once at Sears.
Four times at Macy's.
Yeah, and two are employees.
That's awful. So the lack of creativity. So I want you to think about what Target, Walmart, and Amazon are doing to each other. Just beating each other up on commodities, right? Mm-hmm. Amazon is a technology company. Mm-hmm. We can call it retail, but I believe it's a technology company. But let's talk about Amazon and Target, right? I mean, excuse me, Walmart and Target right now. So Walmart earlier this year had a, when they would ship you something, if you ordered it from walmart.com, it would cost you $35. Like you got over the $35 hump, they shipped it for free. Mm-hmm. Well, earlier this year, they nicked that down to $25. And so to compete with who? Amazon. Because Amazon, now, if you're not a Prime member, if you ordered $35 or more, they shipped your goods for free. So Amazon just this past week took it down to $25 to compete with Walmart.
Wow.
So what does Target do? Target went from $25 to $35. They went the exact opposite direction. Target,
but you can use whatever bathroom you want.
Yeah. Target is the biggest retail joke in America right now. I want you to think about how awful that has to be working at Target. Hey, we're looking for some ideas to spur people to come into our stores.
Let's raise shipping prices.
We're looking for some ideas to really drum up business, to really get people to go to our website and ship it to the store or ship it to their house. What do we have to do here, boys? Well, we could get fireworks every night at the store, or fake vomit when people walk in. Everybody loves fake vomit, huh? I got it, boss. Let's raise the cost of shipping. Everybody's going down. Let's charge them more. The worst people must work at Target. Just awful ideas. They're reconfiguring their stores, by the way, if you don't know. They're going to make them more ship-to-store type centers. So they're going to, when you see a new Target build, it'll be smaller footprint. It'll be more agile, more flexible, more whatever business school words they're teaching you, the synergistic. It'll be more MBA business school words that they'll put into their press releases. That's happening. Don, are you putting an 8-track in or just a regular cassette from 1980?
No, that was, holy that was an 8-track. I like it how... Sorry, I turned my phone off. I clicked my phone off. Boy, you guys have really sensitive ears down that way.
We do. We got sensitive equipment.
So Target is... So I want you to think about this, though. What could have Target have done? It's easy to criticize, right? This is going to make my point here in a few minutes about why Nike won't exist as Nike in the next 5 years. Ooh. Why Under Armour is going to remain under $25 forever. Ever. So what could have Target have done to get people into their stores? Cisco has a technology out right now where you can actually do, you can try on the clothes, right? Come out, model the clothes, and you can actually AI, artificial intelligence. Yes, thank you.
Take a 3D image of your body and say, this will fit.
No, they can actually recommend through artificial intelligence, like what would look good on you. So you come out in an outfit at Target, like they have. Target does a really good job with their clothing, where Walmart does sell clothing, but you're not going to Walmart. I'll be rude in other places, but
Walmart, you're pretty good here too.
Yeah, Walmart sells clothing, but the people that are looking to go to buy their clothing from that type of store, they're going to gravitate most likely to Target. And Target does a very good job of hiring designers to come in and do one-off lots for them. They have a little track record with that. Well, why not offer to come into the store and use the special mirror or to crowdsource your appearance? And you can actually use the artificial intelligence to say, hey, you'd look really good in this, or you'd look really good in this, or this is the makeup you should use. There's no experiential anything. And so it's so uncreative and it's so drab. I mean, is that where we're at? We're all out of good ideas, Danny. Because people, listen, people are going to go to stores. You know, the whole world isn't going to go to Blue Apron or whatever, the order your food through a box. It shows up indoors, sits on your porch, gets baked in the sun, and then you cook. People are going to go to stores, whether you pick it up through, you go to the parking lot and they just bring it out to your car. You're going to go to stores. You're not done yet in this lifetime. Going to stores, it will change drastically, and it'll continue to change.
Look, intelligence is great, but sometimes, you know, like that artificial intelligence to pick your clothes, you know, that might help. But it almost sounds like it's Granimals on
Danny
supercharged.
Let's be honest, you could use Granimals.
Oh!
No, listen. I would love it.
Okay, kettle.
Yeah, exactly. I would love it.
Two fashionistas here in the office.
That's what I'm saying. You know who would pay for it? Seek. You know who would go shop there? Seek. No, husbands.
Oh.
Men. Men would go to these mirrors and have females go.
Look, I'll tell you what. If the computer can tell me sitting at home, while I'm watching sports, this would look good on me. This is good. Yeah. Ship it to me that I don't have to go to the store, then I'll do it. So
So that was just one idea, Danny. So there's no experiential right now in these stores. And that in fact is the problem. We're going to go shopping. So what do you want to do to get people excited for brands? Because pop-up stores do fantastic. If you're a small niche brand and you offer the opportunity to buy your clothes at a pop-up stores, most pop-up stores do very well. You know what a pop-up store is, right, Danny? Yes. Where it's not a permanent structure, or they go into a space that's been abandoned in a strip mall, or and they offer it. It's only for a limited time. You go get the goods there. And it's usually tied to some kind of famous designer or celebrity-esque type offering. But the world is changing right now, and I don't think the likes of Nike and Under Armour are ready for it. Because I want you to think about this. Nike and Under Armour have made their brands. If you read Shoe Dog, which is Phil Knight's autobiography, I got into that. I really did enjoy it. The endorsements are what set Nike ablaze, right? And everyone knows Michael Jordan and whatnot. That model's changing. And I believe it's changing. It's starting with a gentleman by the name of LeVar Ball. So not many people know who LeVar Ball is unless you're reading a lot of sports business, or you maybe are a genuine sports fan. I've turned off the news. The news will not help you make money in the market. I've turned off the news, and I do a lot of reading. So LeVar Ball has his sons, and one of his sons plays at UCLA. His name is Lonzo Ball. And LeVar Ball is the father, his son's Lonzo Ball, and they started LeVar Ball created Big Baller Brand, BBB. And that is his company, and he does nothing but hawk his son. His son's gonna, I mean, and LeVar Ball is outlandish. LeVar Ball is a lot of things. I don't want to get into LeVar Ball, any kind of character assassination for LeVar Ball. I want to speak strictly on what LeVar Ball did. He's managing his sons. He kept them out of, there's a very vicious AAU culture out there, and when it comes to amateur basketball and what the shoe companies do, and you could say they take advantage of the kids. And then this LeVar Ball is overbearing, and he's done some things, but he's not letting anyone else take advantage of his kids. So he's got that, and he created this brand called Big Baller Brand, and it's focused right now on his son. But he's got two other sons that play basketball, and they'll be the other two.
They're the other ballers coming up.
They're the other ballers coming up. So LeVar Ball is a fascinating creature. So he meets with the shoe companies. His son's going to be probably the second pick in the NBA draft. And the traditional model is Nike or Adidas will fight for Under Armour
yeah,
now.
Yeah, who gets you?
Yeah, hey, look, we'll give you X amount of dollars. We'll give you this million. We'll give you this million, and you just wear our shoes. And he said, no, you're gonna co-brand with me. We're not going to endorse you. You're going to endorse us. And that's a really big distinction. You are going to endorse us. Now, a lot of people, hold on, let me write a note down here because I'm about to tie this point into something else. A lot of people don't like this because it's not traditional. Oh, traditional is the father, you know, the son, by the way, is not a loudmouth speaker. It's the father that does all the speaking. But people don't like this brashness. People don't like this arrogance. People don't like this confidence. No, who are you? You haven't earned anything. And they're siding with the big corporations. They're siding with Nike and Under Armour and Adidas, and they're saying, this guy is out of control. He needs to do it the way everybody else is doing it. And I'm thinking, this guy's brilliant. This guy is changing retail as we know it. And people are too dumb, too stodgy, too stiff to even recognize what's right in front of their face. So let's pretend for a second that this, he literally said he took meetings with Nike, Under Armour, and Adidas just so he could hear him say, no, we're not going to co-brand with you. You either sign with us or we do nothing with you. He just wanted to hear him say no. So what he did was he created his own shoe, for his son, which is the Big Baller brand shoe, costs $495 a pair. And
wow.
Well, right. Now, to the people in the audience, that's going to sound like a lot of money. I don't want to castigate anybody in the audience, but we have this genre skews a little older. And what I'm either speaking about is going completely over your head, or you don't like the confident, arrogant personalities that would create a sneaker that costs $30 to make, $20 to make, and get charged $495. But let me tell you something about this. This guy's created an entire brand right now on his own with no marketing budget. It's just him. He priced his shoes so everybody would talk about them. That's brilliant. Think about that. If his shoes cost $90, his shoes cost $100.
They're just one of the
just another shoe in the rack, man. Just another idiot who made a piece of apparel that no one
apparel ever, leather.
Yeah, that nobody cares about. But what he did was through arrogance and confidence and saying, I'm not going to partner with you, Nike and Adidas and Under Armour. I'm going to be my own brand, and you'll come to me in a couple years when this thing takes off, and you'll want to be a part of it. Because he thinks his kid's going to be the next thing since sliced bread, the next Michael Jordan, better than Steph Curry. That's what he thinks. Well, I don't even know if it matters if he's right. Because what he did was he created a shoe that cost $495. His flip-flops, or as they call them, slides, cost $200. So I want you to think about that. The freaking flip-flops, right?
There's a margin there.
So when asked, he goes... Someone goes, what right do you have to charge $200 for a pair of flip-flops? He goes, what right does Gucci have for charging that? You accept Gucci, but you don't accept me? And then he raised a really important issue. Do you not accept it because I'm a black man creating my own brand?
Oh, playing the race card.
No, he's not playing the race card. I think there's a semblance of truth to that.
Well, whatever.
You don't think that?
There are a lot of wealthy black entrepreneurs. You want
the He's absolutely to, playing the race card. How can you pull that out of nowhere?
Okay.
But I'm not saying it's not effective.
Okay. We just raised the issue.
That's for darn sure. Yeah.
So,
and by the way, if $495 isn't enough, you can get a $995 version that are autographed.
There you go. There you go. So he creates...
I want him to take me to dinner for $1,000.
So he creates this whole buzz about his shoes. And you know what you can't do? You can't get them right now. They're only going to become available in November. So you know what he did? He took orders.
Took money up front.
He did the smartest thing that retailers should be doing. He took the money up front. He's going to place the order. And then you're going to get your shoes. So you know what he doesn't have?
That's better than just-in-time inventory.
He doesn't have supply. He doesn't have a whole warehouse full of things that aren't selling that have to be sold.
He takes your order first and then makes
you
them.
You darn straight. Make them wake. And it doesn't have to go to TJ Maxx. Doesn't have to go to Burlington. Doesn't have to go to all those discounters. Doesn't that...
He went Tesla Model 3 on them.
Yeah. Doesn't that sound like a smarter way to do business? Does
hats off to the guy. It's a genius move. If you can make something work in America, how can you begrudge anybody? It's supply and demand. It's free market.
100 in a week. He sold $150,000 worth of these shoes. Now you don't know what you don't know if it's the $1,000. You don't know. So you're taking him at his word that he did about $150,000 worth of business the first week these shoes were available. But you know what he did? He cut out Nike. He cut out Adidas. He cut out.
Yeah. In other words, if his son had been representing Nike, his son would have gotten maybe $30 a shoe, or their family, whatever, $30 a shoe. Now they're getting
LeVar Ball told us that from what I was reading that his son was offered a contract that would have probably netted him $1 to $2 million a year. So in the first year of doing some research, this part of the. The information comes from a fellow named Darren Revelle, and you can find him on Twitter if you don't know who he is. Darren Revelle used to be a business reporter, and now he's still a business reporter. He's just now with ESPN. So Darren Revelle was saying he probably cost his sons if his son Lonzo Ball is a bust, and they don't sell another pair of shoes, he probably cost them in the neighborhood of $6 to $8 million. But what a gamble. That's pure entrepreneurialism.
That's right.
To say, you are not going to take advantage of my son. My son's not a piece of cattle. He's not in the Nike stable. He's not in the Under Armour stable. Look at the ugly shoes Under Armour is putting out for Steph Curry. Jesus. They're awful. Under Armour is a $20 stock right now. How far has Under Armour... No one knew that, right? I just said Under Armour is a $20 stock, and no one knew that. Nike's, what, $53, $55 a share? Who cares? All of their stuff is commoditized.
Well, it's becoming commoditized.
So many people wear it. Nobody cares. You can create... This whole world is gravitating towards the niche. The what do you have that people want of the now? Amazon is, does Amazon really have something they want of the now, or is Amazon just convenient and easy and great customer service? Like I was lamenting on the great customer service from OtterBox.
Right.
You don't think I won't buy another OtterBox? I'm going to buy OtterBox forever, knowing that if I break it, they're going to send me another one because it cost them $2 to make that play.
They got three replacements built into the price.
So yeah, exactly. Yeah, no, they're right. But they didn't make me jump through hoops to get it. That was the part you liked. I liked. That most people like. You call up Amazon, they make it right away. They don't make it a hassle. So Amazon doesn't really have anything. I mean, you could say Amazon with Echo and now Dot, and they've got this other calling device that just came out. Echo is a Wave or something. It's fantastic. Like, that's a whole nother genre for Amazon. But most people are utilizing Amazon for what Amazon is, a place to do commerce. And yet... there's nothing experiential about Walmart. I would love to avoid Walmart only because the store I go to in Rockwall, they could knock that store down. Let me tell you something about Walmart. They could, in Rockwall, Texas, they could knock that store down, rebuild it from new, and it would be dirty the moment I walked in there. They can't keep that store. I don't understand it. You walk in, and it's like Pigpen had just walked in. Like, I followed the dust cloud that is Pigpen. Like, I look at the floors. I'm like, how are these effing so dirty? Every time I go in there, they mop the floor with mud. Dirtiest store. It's got to be the dirtiest store in Texas. I challenge anyone to send me a picture of their Walmart and have it. I put my Walmart in Rockwall off the I-30 as the dirtiest store in the Walmart chain. There is no other dirtier store than that in this country. Maybe the world.
Take a picture, send him a tweet.
Damn straight. I go into Target, it's bright, it's clean. I don't understand it. So I go back, tell me you were just beating up Target for what was I beating them up for? lack of creativity. Yeah, they've got clean stores that no one's going into. So when your answer to solve the dilemma of how do we compete with Walmart and how do we compete with Amazon is to raise the cost of shipping. And if you come back to me and tell me, well, that was a deterrent so people would come into the stores. Okay.
Now that defies logic.
Yeah.
I mean,
that's the same logic for the person who's going to eat, like, let's pretend that you, let's pretend that when you eat spicy food, you get diarrhea, right? So you're like, you know what I'm going to do to prevent this diarrhea from happening when I eat that spicy food later? I'm going to give myself diarrhea. So take that, spicy food. Already happened earlier.
That was a terrible analogy.
Yeah, I'm not really good with them today.
I got a question I want to ask because you're talking about this price wars.
Yeah.
And, you know, if you get the Amazon Prime, which because of you, my wife joined it, and it's very cool. You get free shipping all year long, but it's like $100 or whatever. Well, if Amazon takes their price for free shipping for people that are not Prime members down from 20, 35 to 25, are they going to lose Prime subscribers? If it starts getting cheaper and cheaper for free shipping, why have the Prime?
I don't think so. I think Amazon, for me, Amazon, I don't order typically, I don't even know what the hell I order, but I don't feel like it's $25 at a crack. I feel like I literally ordered, Danny, I use Ticonderoga number 2 pencils.
You order one box of pencils?
No, I ordered like some sharpeners, like some hand sharpeners, and they were like $3. And they shipped them for free, you know, but I have Prime. I have the Fire.
So you abuse the Prime. I got you. There are abusers like you.
No, I just needed some.
I normally will try to bundle an order and get some.
No, I just need it. I'm like, you know what? I'm not going to the store for this. And then I use the Prime, the Amazon Fire TV, because the Amazon Video is pretty good. And then I access my DirecTV Now through Amazon Fire TV. Did we lose Don?
Don.
I'm here.
Okay. Do you have Amazon Prime?
Absolutely. I've had it for probably as long as they've had it available.
Yeah, it's just such a good value.
Don's an early adopter.
And then I use Amazon Music.
Don hates going shopping.
I've got Amazon Photo, which comes free with Prime. I have 22,000 photos uploaded in the cloud that are backed up. I love it. I mean, and that's how they get you. They're going to get you with that free. And you can, anyway, Amazon is fantastic. So this lack of creativity, though, I think isn't just... It affects so many areas right now of commerce, of media, and so you've got this. I believe this LeVar Ball is onto something. What's to say this big baller brand doesn't take off and LeVar Ball goes, you know what, the public wants me, and he starts issuing shares in himself. You want to talk about sidestepping whole industries?
Right.
Spotify. Spotify is going to direct list on the NYSE, on the New York Stock Exchange. They're going to bypass the bankers. They don't need to do a roadshow. You know what they want to do? They want to put shares out into the market space so their people can actually cash out for all their hard work, so their investors can change shares. Now, they got to have enough shares to have liquidity to make a market, and institutional investor high five that happens with the roadshow from Goldman Sachs or JP Morgan, where they twist the arms of everybody out there.
They squeeze a retailer.
Yeah. You know, let me explain this real quickly. So let's say you have XYZ coming to the market, and the deal's being held by is being conducted by Goldman Sachs. A lot of people don't realize this is what happens.
And
so
private insiders want to get out.
Goldman Sachs will go to all of the people that want IPOs, because IPOs pop, and when they have all this media and a whole energy behind them, think Alibaba, they just shoot up right out of the market, you know, right out of the chute. Doesn't matter what happens afterwards. So everybody, it happened with Facebook before it fell back. Everybody who was on the inside or who got those IPO shares had an instant profit the moment it opens up on the market. Right. So who makes money? Everybody but you. The bankers get fees. The insiders get a free goose of anywhere from 7 to 20-25% right out of the bat. And then what do they tell you to do? They say retail should buy these shares. Retail buys the shares.
Mutual funds.
And do you know what happens? Like, people don't realize this, that those mutual funds, they get cold called. They're not cold called, but they get called. Hey, you want some of this? Yeah, okay, so you got to free up some cap space. What do? You sell some of your leaders. Sell some of your things that you book some profits on to make room for the new Alibaba. So Spotify says, screw this. Why are we going to pay Goldman Sachs millions? And we're just going to put our shares right directly on the NYSE. They're LeVar balling the banks. If this goes well, I want you to watch this when it happens. If this goes well and their shares have liquidity and they can actually, and by the way, all the reporting in the world, there's nothing going to be changed. All the requirements to be listed on the New York Stock Exchange still exist. If this goes well, who else do you think cuts the banks out?
Oh, this is a big
this is a big deal.
This is a beta test. Yeah,
this is a very big deal. And if I was JP Morgan, if I was Goldman Sachs,
they'll do everything they can to block it. They'll tell them.
No, it's already happening.
Their retail investors, do not buy, stay away from
it. They'll
downgrades.
Yeah. But you know who's going to fight them? The people that exchange the shares. TD, when you make a transaction, Schwabi, ScottoTrade, which is owned by TD now, E-Trade. They get fees every time you buy those shares. So you know what? They're going to counterbalance that. They won't come out and tell you. They want you to trade. They want you to trade more. Trade often, trade more. And so this Spotify test, I'm telling you, the antiquation, we are living in the most dynamic, wonderful time to be alive. Because you're seeing the undoing of the great Sam Walton as a fight. Walmart is climbing a greasy wall. Target can't even figure out how to drive to the greasy wall. You're seeing the venerable banks. J.P. Morgan is about to get out. All the deals that J.P. Morgan and NYSE all did together, and all those people that know each other and all cozy and they're just incestuous relationships, then it's so cutthroat in the business world. The NYSE just stuck their foot up J.P. Morgan's because it's a survival of the fittest right now. And in that vein, when I think about this genre of broadcasting words to your ears, that's been dying forever. Clear Channel might go under. Well, it's iHeartRadio. Yeah, Clear Channel's the billboard company. Yeah. iHeartRadio. They list in their earnings report, we might not be a going concern, which is code for bankruptcy.
Right.
Again. But I want you to think about this. I got something better for segment two. In the first quarter of 2017, 212,000 viewers for Fox Business tuned in every day. And that's compared with 183,000 for CNBC. What a cesspool of stagnicity these two networks are. Well, Tim, you're not being fair here or there. You're going to watch the business news during the business day, and most people work. Nobody's watching this nonsense on TV. It's antiquated. You would come and get video clips if it was interesting. You would find a celebrity host if it was interesting. But it's just two people. You know what a stock can do, Danny? An index can do? One of three things, up, sideways, or down.
Yep.
So, I like Tesla. You don't like Tesla. Let's argue about Tesla. And you're just no better for it. You're left with no direction. You're left without any kind of original thought as to, you know, what really might happen here. So how do you stand out in this? You know, what Danny, Don, and myself here are doing is trying to educate, trying to have a little fun, but not trying to be different for different sake, but trying that whole originality thing. How about strategery? Well, you know what, Danny? You just buy Apple, you don't trade it. Look, there's a time where you don't buy Apple. There's going to be a time where you don't buy Amazon because it's probabilistic investing. How many people bought Amazon after the earnings report because it's going to 1,000 only to watch it trade in this zone right now? And I'm not saying it's not going to 1,000. I'm not saying I don't like Amazon. I'm saying you can actually be strategic. Well, Tim, they tell us that you can't time the market. I'm going to get into that in the second segment if you want. Maybe you don't want to. But you have to have better creativity right now, I think, than pure indexing. Because the market is designed. Hear these words. I'm not a fearmonger, but hear these words. The market is designed to inflict the most amount of pain at the least opportune time to the most amount of people. Who is that group of people right now, Daniel?
you want me to answer that?
I do.
the retail investor.
It's the retail investor.
Yeah, look, if you look around at the poker table and you don't know who the patsy is, it's you. So if you don't know who the patsy is, who's set up to take the fall, it's you.
So Ray Dalio comes out on Friday, and he's got four reasons for pessimism, and he's got four reasons why the market is really scary, and it's gonna, it's biggest hedge fund says long-term economic picture looks scary. And I don't know anything about Ray Dalio, but I know the words of fearmongers. I know the words of people who are underinvested. I know the words of people who don't have the right mix of investments. They say things like economic growth at or near its best with no major economic risk in the next 2 years. Significant long-term, these are all problems for him. Significant long-term problems such as high debt levels, central bank power, payments, social programs, social and political conflicts. Conflicts get worse when economies worsen. All of that was said in 07, 08, 09. It's been said every year since the bottom in 2009. But before anybody mistakes me for being a perma bull, I think that you have to understand there are moments in time to lighten up and take some cash. There's moments in time. People will pay hefty sums to know when to leave the party. This is the kind of fear that's been driving the market up. And it's so counterintuitive, but because of the way humans are wired, you don't get it. People just play on your fears. But yet you at home who index, blindly invest in your 401ks without any protections whatsoever, and I'm not talking hedging, you don't know how to sell. And every day that goes by, if you choose to think about your investments, and I think you do because you're listening to the show, right? You wonder when the next shoe's going to drop, but it just keeps going higher. Eventually, that temptress will lull you to sleep. But not here at the shop, because we know when to sell. We won't get out of the exact top, but it'll be in the upper half. I'd make a bet with anybody about that. Now, those cesspools that are CNBC and Fox that put this nonsense and this Ray Dalio nonsense upon their viewers to scare them. I want you to understand this. A point that Daniel has been saying for as long as I've known Danny, he's been telling you this about the advertisers. Now listen to this. Nobody is listening to those television stations. I just told you that. Even though CNBC is in over 800 million homes, that's all they can muster. A couple hundred, 183,000 in the first quarter of 2017. See, it's a lucrative niche, though. $1 billion across the two stations generated, $735 million for CNBC and $260 million for Fox. So who do those channels serve? Do they serve you, the viewer? Or do they serve the advertisers? And with that, stock nerds and market lovers, we'll be back with segment two.
Ton of social networking websites, but one stands apart for a very special reason. This one saves lives. It's matchingdonors.com. Matchingdonors.com links organ donors with people in need of kidney and other transplants. In the U.S., 19 people die each day waiting for an organ transplant, most of them for kidneys. If you've ever considered becoming a living organ donor, or if you're someone in need of an organ transplant, visit matchingdonors.com, home of the greatest gift of all, the gift of life, matchingdonors.com.
And welcome back, folks, to Your Money Radio. I'm your host, Danny Stewart, and in studio with me is Tim Razor. And on the phone in Florida is none other than portfolio manager extraordinaire Don Vandenborde. And before I flip it back to Tim, he's got an interesting topic that he does want to address before we dive deep into the markets to give our stock nerd some red meat. I did want to say, if you want to find out more about our company, sign up for a free market daily video. It's 5 minutes, 10 minutes, sometimes 15 with Tim or Don, not going short enough. Or you just want to ping us and ask us questions, you can just go to revereasset.com. Can you make any more noise over there? Revereasset.com. Tim's just like in his own world, doing papers.
I'm not going to lie to you. I really was in my own world. I wasn't even thinking. I'm sorry.
All right. Well, anyway, go ahead. Go right ahead. It's all you. You have one last topic you want to hear.
Yeah, you know what? Real quick, you said red meat. I think we should mention the classes are going to start back up again. We haven't done class in 2 years. We haven't done a class in 2 years. And I spent a lot of time. This isn't what I want to talk about, but I'll quickly address this. I spent a lot of time about originality and thought on that last segment. And the hidden motive, really, what's going on there is you're just, you know, sheeple with Nike and Under Armour and sheeple with CNBC and Fox.
Right.
And there's strategy behind what we're doing here. And there's a difference between being different for different sake, but or being different because different works.
It works better.
Works better. And so I think what we're going to do, Don is going to... We've been doing a lot of gap ups lately. Mm-hmm. And there's a couple ways to do gap ups.
And
gap downs. And Don has really good strategy on gap up and gap downs. And then I created this earnings thing. Man, it's been working all earnings season. There's a specific time that gap, you know, that things gap up after earnings
and hold and keep on going.
And if you understand the premise behind that, and Don's going to teach that, it's really powerful.
And we're going to let Don do the next one. Yeah.
Yeah. And then I think we'll try to work it this summer, maybe in June. There's a way to scan and find one of my favorite setups. It's moving average expansion.
Right
before the moving averages expand and fan out. And if you want some really good examples of this, look at Momo right now and look at Apple.
MOMO.
Yeah, look at that moving average expansion. And people don't do those types of things, and they're different. They're interesting, and they can really make a difference, especially during earnings season when earnings season can be very misleading. So I find that interesting. I also think the NASDAQ hits a new high next week.
Yeah. So folks, keep an eye out for that because we will post a sign up page on our website real soon. We're just hammering down the day. We're looking at our calendars.
You know, but more
probably a couple weeks, 3 weeks, but it'll be online.
And if it's not soon enough for you, just reach out. Wow. Don at revereasset.com or myself, Tim at revereasset.com. Just reach out. We're more than happy to talk you through things. Yeah. And so, anyway, the Warren Buffett, right, is going to win a bet with a hedge fund manager. And I'm not going to get to everything.
I wonder what they bet, like a dollar, like trading places. They bet $1.
Are you not familiar with this? I'm not being facetious with you. It's like a 10-year bet, $1 million.
Yeah.
I don't even know what it is. It's anyway, the hedge fund manager feller is going to lose it because he's not going to beat the S&P 500 index. And he brought up some interesting points. He wrote an article recently, like why he lost the bet to just the S&P. Mm-hmm. And so here's one of his reasonings. I'm just going to read it verbatim. I don't like doing that, but I don't need to summarize. I need to read it verbatim. He lost the bet to Warren Buffett because the unexpected strength of the S&P 500 was a key contributor to Warren's victory, he says. Despite trading for a high multiple of earnings and facing an elevated risk, the S&P 500 performed in line with historical averages. However, unlikely the outcome that may have seemed 9 years ago, it is only the one point that played out. So he's talking 9 years ago, and he's saying that despite trading for a high multiple of earnings and facing an elevated level of risk, the S&P performed in line with historical averages. However, unlikely the outcome. And here's the word that I want you to focus on at home, stock nerds. Unexpected. It's a dangerous and a deranged word. So if you approach the market with the mindset that anything can happen, then you're open to the possibility that the market could bottom in, say, March of 2009, and that it could go in higher in the face of all the news. How many of you out there are short or are buying meals ready to eat, MREs for your militaristic folks, because you think the world is coming to hell, and it's hell in a handbasket, man. And it might. I mean, we're one Trump tweet away from more, right? Turn off the news.
One Kim Jong-il missile.
Yeah. I mean, just turn off the news. I mean, yeah, could you have predicted the black swan? Well, that's the counterintuitive. That's you can't predict the black. That's what the black swan is.
Right.
Well, there's a black swan indicator that says it's coming. Oh, okay. How long is that?
That it's not a black swan.
Right.
Would that make it a gray swan, white swan? What is that?
And so my point here is if you can define your risk on the charts. The charts is where all selling takes place. And to say that I too would have gone long the S&P 500, but it had the worst things in the world, man, are you can say high multiples to yourself or high elevated PE, price to earnings ratio. They're the worst indicators. This fella missed out on potentially just an opportunity because of traditional CNBC-esque thinking.
Well, and to your point, he said because of the unexpected these things. Here's the problem. Unexpected things happen. And you just got to measure what is happening and make adjustments. You know, the biggest thing that he didn't count, in my, this is my opinion, this is my speculation now, which we don't do when we're managing money. But I'll tell you what, because he sounds a little more bearish.
Yeah.
He didn't count on the Fed pumping in $3 to $4 trillion in supporting the markets. So you know, you gotta adjust for that.
So the higher price an investor pays for an asset, the less he should expect to earn. This is a quote from this fella. When we made the bet in 2008, the S&P 500 traded at the end of its historical range. Probability suggested the S&P would generate low returns in the future, which would have helped the relative performance of hedge funds. Listen, this is class A douchery right here. I think Don wants to jump in on
Is there class B douchery?
Oh yeah, there's just different levels of douchebaggery that float around this like the what is the little fish that catch the outside of a whale, you know, they get the
that's a shark and it's called a lamprey.
Is that what it is? They catch the extra.
It's called a lamprey, yes.
Yeah, there's all kinds of douchebaggery. There's levels in the sea. And this guy is class A. This guy's a moocher here. Look, these PE multiples, why can't the market turn higher? Just like the market could turn lower. Like probabilistically, I think the market's coiled this coming week for the NASDAQ to go up and hit even new highs. So I got a tweet on Friday, a direct message. The NASDAQ's been up, 6% in the last 30 days. How much higher can it go? Long, if you're short, longer than you can remain solvent.
Yeah, right.
Is right. The answer. And so the hardest thing to do is sometimes sit on trades. The hardest thing to do is we're not wired to suspend. Because you say, well, you just got to suspend disbelief and understand that it could I don't understand why it's elevating higher. There's a lot of things I don't understand, but I can read a chart and I can tell you that until we get some kind of moving average cross to the downside, there's just no selling in this market right now. It doesn't mean we won't test key levels. Doesn't mean we couldn't have an extraneous event. Doesn't mean we could tag highs and then revert lower.
You're saying you're not seeing any major big red flags at the moment.
No.
Could change next week.
Could always change. But to say that, well, historically, it should do this. Let me put it in a different way. Danny has said I'm bad with analogies today. How many fellas out there or ladies have had someone cheat on them that you didn't see it coming? Well, historically.
This guy was a good guy.
Yeah. Historically, this guy never cheated on me. And then one day, he was just sleeping with Marine. Well, right. Well, historically, he's not supposed to sleep with another woman, but he did. Some of you aren't going to invest in guys again.
Yeah. Now, normally you have pretty good analogies, but that first
it was rough.
The first segment. You've been around for a while. You've been around the baby, little baby in diapers, and apparently there's a lot of flow going on there. So I just didn't like the dysentery example. It just
I'll give one more. Then I know Don's got really good points.
Yeah, we
got
to get to the markets here.
No, I know. I want him to talk about this nonsense, this Class A douchebaggery here. Mm-hmm. So he goes, Warren and I have written during the past 2 years that I will win, that he will win the bet absent a market crash. That's what Warren Buffett says to this fella. Hedge funds tend to significantly outperform in bear markets, as demonstrated in 2008,
right.
2000, 2002. The same risk mitigating properties tempered hedge fund returns in the rally that began in March of 2009. Do you know why hedge funds, I know you know why, Daniel, mm-hmm. why do hedge funds outperform like this guy states when the market's
hedge,
in tumult? Maybe. Let me not say no. Because the whole industry is geared towards you being in 100% of the time. Cash for your advisor at home, if you're not with us in the shop here at Revere. Your advisor has an interest, a douchebag, Class A, douchebaggery reason to keep you in the markets 100% of the time is because he doesn't get paid if you're in cash. Cash is not a position to the guy
if
who's
you're at a brokerage firm. Yes.
To a guy who hangs his shingle with the words Edward and Jones at the top of the door. Cash is not a position for them. And it never will be. Because Edward and Jones don't get paid if you're in cash. So everything will outperform the person who is a pie chartist. Gosh, this industry.
Yeah. And I would like to make one point.
Make them all.
A lot of hedge funds, by their definition, are managing risk. They're not necessarily, not all of them. A lot of them do try to beat the S&P, but a lot of them are not trying to beat the S&P. They're trying to make reasonable long-term returns without big drawdowns. They're not, so you have the hedge fund so that you don't get creamed in 2000. You don't get creamed in 2008. It's a smoother ride. What this guy was saying is, I underperformed because the market was, rocketing up and there wasn't any big corrections I was looking for. And to your point, that's why you need to be nimble. That's why you need to move stuff around. All right. Without further ado, we're going to do, Don, do you want to make a comment on this before we do the good, the bad, the ugly?
And for that, the hedge funds would be very glad to take 2% of your money plus 20% of the profits so that you can talk about them at your cocktail party.
Oh, bada bing. It's the Godfather analogy from the first segment. I make you an offer you can't refuse. All right. All right, Don. Speaking of that, let's start. You want to start out with the bad?
Sure. Let's start out with the bad.
Let's give us the bad, Don, so we can
first,
feel
course,
good at
the
end.
We got to talk about what happened this past week.
Sure.
We've got the NASDAQ and the NASDAQ 100 positive. All the other major of the four indexes, that's the S&P 500, the Dow Jones Industrial Average, the S&P 400 mid-cap, and the S&P 600 and Russell 2000 small caps indexes, all to the downside. Mid and small caps trailed for the week down 1.2%. So that's our baseline. S&P 500 down 0.4%. So we start there, and then the good and the bad and the ugly goes from there. So the bad award for the week goes to transports, banks, and retail, all down between 1.9% and 2.9%. We've been watching these as hoping that they get back above their 50-day moving average because it would certainly make it easier for the S&P 500 to make all-time highs if we had the banks and the transports participating. But to this point, not happening.
Yeah, and you heard the I can't remember which Fed, regional Fed chairman came out Friday midday and said, oh, you know what, two rate hikes are probably on the table for this year, and I think we're going to do them. Has to put his 2 cents worth. Anyway, go ahead.
That's about what it's worth, 2 cents.
Oh, thank you.
So that's the bad. Let's do the good now. And Dan, of course, affirmed in Alidar. Was it 1977? I think it was. Amazon and Google are affirmed in Alidar, coming down the back stretch on the race to 1,000. Amazon pulled ahead this week, 961 to 955, with a strong day on Friday. But yep. The real good award goes to, and shameless plug. This is two Gap Ups. Is it Gap Ups or Gaps Up? What do you think the proper way to say that is?
Well, normally it would be Gap Ups, I believe, but I think in technical stock terms, I think it's Gap Ups.
Okay, let's go with that.
I would think Gaps Up would be English grammatically correct, but I think we call them Gap Ups.
The Trade Desk, TTD, up 30% for the week, and NVIDIA, NVDA, up 23% for the week, both of which we bought following our Gap rules and showed us some very quick profits right out of the gate. But those are getting the good award this week.
All right. Well, that's go ahead.
And certainly my favorite, the ugly, and there was lots of ugly to go around this week. Let's talk about, and there were actually two uglies whose ticker symbol, company name, in reaction to earnings, all were the same word. Yelp went Yelp and Snap went Snap.
Wow.
On their earnings reaction, Yelp down 20%, Snap down 17%. That's, of course, after a nice rally, 6% rally of Snap on Friday, it was even worse. Note on Snap, they've got 1.2 billion shares locked up that are coming up available July and August of this year. So
little downward pressure.
Overhead support, known as.
Yep. Little downward pressure.
But the real ugly award for the week goes to ticker symbol M, Macy's. And this is something that, CEOs of companies owe it to their shareholders to just stay out of politics, stay neutral. Macy's gapped down again, down 18% for the week. Since they decided to remove their Trump merchandise on July of 2015, they are down 64%.
Wow.
Versus the XRT retail index, down 12%. 9 straight quarterly revenue declines for Macy's. So Macy's, congratulations, you get the ugly award for this week.
Man, that's true, man. And you hurt at least half of your customer base. I mean, about 50-50, it's at least half your – and if you buy the argument, which I don't, but if you buy the argument that conservatives or Republicans or whatever you want to call them are slightly more affluent or a little bit better off, it seems like you may have even more than 50%. So, I mean, it's just a bad move either way.
It is a bad move either way, and that's –
That's
all I have to say about that, as Forrest Gump would say.
That's a double ugly. That's the double ugly.
Forrest Gump's mom said stupid is a stupid does, and that is kind of what we're talking about.
All right, very quickly, we got to go, but what are you going to be looking at going into next week?
I want to make sure that the mid caps and the small caps hold their 50-day moving average, which coincided twice with the lows of their range this past week. Tim made a good point in his video this week that if they can get up and go, they might carry the bigger indexes with them. But they've been underperforming, the last 2 weeks, and they need to hold at a minimum. And then certainly B, if they could take off to the upside, the market's really got a shot of breaking out.
All right, folks.
And by the market, I mean the S&P 500.
Oh,
that continues.
I've got an ugly.
Make new highs.
Okay, hang on. Tim wants to jump in and throw his ugly hat in the ring.
Awesome.
Pepsi Fire. Cinnamon-flavored cola is coming to a store near you on May 22nd.
Oh.
Yeah.
Oh. Well, with that, stock nerds, enjoy the rest of your weekend. If you like what you heard, tell a friend, tell a neighbor, go out to Revere. Tim just showed me a picture of it on the internet.
This has to be a joke.
Fake news. Fake commercial.
Sad.
Fake commercial. All right, folks. If you like what you heard, tell a friend, tell a neighbor. Go out and check out our research at revereasset.com. Be looking, or you can reach out to us early to make sure you get on the sign up. The space will be limited for the webinar, the teaching engagement that Don is going to do this time. And that will probably be likely in 3 weeks or so. We'll get it on the calendar. And if you want to sign up for our daily market newsletter, again, just go to revereasset.com. And if you want to call us old school, just call us at 855-REAL-WEALTH. We'll talk to you next week on Your Money.